From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Let's face it, there comes a point, and it's probably different for everyone, but there comes a point when our bodies start to break down. We lose bone density and muscle mass, not to mention strength and power and flexibility, and most of us just concede the point. This is what happens when we get old. But what if you could change that? Not the getting old part, but the stuff that comes with it, or at least bend the curve a bit. There's a growing body of research that shows it's not about the age, it's about the inactivity. Today in the program, we're beginning a series on fitness, and we're going to begin by talking about aging and exercise. We'll have with us a researcher and a physical trainer who will help explain that in order to age gracefully, we need to age actively. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're beginning an occasional series on fitness. Now, this is one of those areas where people get set in their ways. We have our routines and we have our techniques, and some of this stuff is not exactly based on research or science. Some of the things you're doing right now to stay in shape may be outdated or inefficient or, in the worst cases, counterproductive. So we're going to be tackling the myths with what we are learning about health and fitness. We're going to begin today, though, by talking about exercise and aging. It's true, the older we get, the less muscle mass we have and the less flexible we are. Some of this is natural, but some of it is not. There's research that shows a lot of the things we relate to aging are really more about inactivity than about some natural process. We invite you to join the conversation today. If you have questions or observations or comments, 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We would also like to hear from those of you on Facebook and on Twitter. Dr. Joseph Signorelli is with us today. He's a professor of exercise physiology at the University of Miami in Florida, where he studies physical training for older people. He's the author of the book Bending the Aging Curve, and he's joining us today from a studio in Coral Gables, Florida. Dr. Signorelli, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And we have with us also in studio Paul Holbrook, a gerontologist, a certified strength and conditioning specialist. His gym, Age Performance, here in Salt Lake City, trains adults age 50 and older. And Paul Holbrook, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Paul, I wanted to begin with you and a story that I've heard you tell. You've talked about this experience that really, I guess, in some ways sort of helped you focus your work and your perspective about all of this. And this is when you went, as I understand it anyway, and visited an uncle of yours in a nursing home some time ago.
Yeah, part of that focus came from actually a very frustrating time in my life. It was after my undergraduate work, and I worked for some family businesses, and I was extremely frustrated because it's not what I liked. It's not what I wanted to do. So I stopped that and did some other things to refocus what I wanted to do. Yeah. And I knew that exercise was a big part of what I liked and what I enjoyed. So I took some time and did a lot of research at the university library, diving into this, looking at
like exercise mechanics.
Exercise, like yes. Uh-huh. And not always had done exercise myself,
yeah,
and been way into it. And at that same time, my uncle, who had some pretty bad health, was in a nursing home and walked in there to go visit him and thought, wow, what would happen if these real frail older adults engaged in strength training like athletes or real aggressive strength training? It would either kill them or, you know, make them better. So that's how I kind of did that.
Yeah. So that's the kind of, that's what got you started thinking about that.
Yes.
Dr. Signorelli, did you have a kind of an epiphanal moment that got you thinking, that got you interested in all of this in the first place?
I guess it was very, very similar, except mine was generated by one of my graduate students. I had a graduate student named Diana Flipsey who came to me and said, Dr. Signorelli, I'd like to study resistance training. That was when a lot of the information had been coming out of Tufts University. And I said to her, well, I'm really not that interested in older individuals, but if you'd like, I will work with you on your thesis. And I became interested probably for the same reason that Paul said, and that is I was interested in the fact that we could apply the techniques that we used with athletes to actually the older individual. And one of the factors that we became very interested in was the loss of faster contracting muscle fiber with aging, which led us to our first research looking at the utilization of high-speed training and power for older individuals. So that's sort of what got me started.
Yeah. We're going to get into that because I want to be really particular about some of these points. But let's define maybe more broadly this idea of what we're talking about when we're talking about fitness. Because I think a lot of people, when they think of the idea, they're thinking about, you know, looking good and bodybuilding, those kinds of things. But I think for you, Paul Holbrook, and for you, Dr. Signorelli, you're thinking about something more practical, how fitness works in terms of letting you live an ordinary life, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, one thing that happened in our studio just recently that kind of comes to mind is I had two individuals come on the same day, and we do an assessment. And one of those things that we do is you stand up from a chair five times, and we time you how long it takes to stand up from a chair five times. And we had they were both roughly the same age. This one was a male, and he was a long-distance runner. And that's all he did. And he does ultramarathons. He does, you know, he just runs and runs and runs. And his time in that five chair stand up was 9.2 seconds. That same day, I had a woman come in, and she was totally inactive, extremely overweight, had lost her husband 6 months prior, so wasn't doing anything. And she did the same exact test, and she did it in 6.3 seconds, so faster than what he did. And so that was a very interesting, you know, thing to me. And so subsequently, what we've done with our training with the woman is we've done this same training that Dr. Signorelli is talking about, and we've brought her time down even faster to 3.7 seconds.
Now, what you're saying is, Paul, is getting out of a chair. I mean, we're not talking about we're talking about living independently, living, and we'll talk about the particulars of all that,
right?
But keep going.
The point is that we think that this individual who runs a lot or who does marathons is incredibly good shape, or you know, and they are in that regard. But as far as some of these other functional movements or things, I think that we need to age better in terms of being quick and have fast movements gets retarded if we don't do the right thing. And I think this is a clear indication of that.
Yeah. Dr. Signorelli, you've told a story in your book about Betty, this woman who you describe as 5 foot nothing, weighed 94 pounds or something like that. And tell that story if you would, because I think that was really insightful about in terms of.
This was during one of our first studies, and you know, we have qualification criteria for our subjects. And we had tested her, and one of the requirements was that you did not train. So as we tested this woman, she was producing power outputs and strength outputs that were blowing away all of the women who were, you know, maybe 20, 30 pounds larger than she was. We continued to question her. You know, Betty, you must train. And she kept telling us, no, I don't. And we said, well, you know, honestly, with the numbers we're getting right now, we don't think you'd be eligible. And she said, well, no, you have to let me in. I've been driving all the way up here from Homestead, Florida, and I really want to be in your study. And we said, well, you know, we got to talking to her and finding out what she did in Homestead, Florida, and we found out that Betty worked on a farm. So Betty really didn't need us. Betty was getting plenty of physical labor that was positively affecting her functionality. She honestly did not need our program.
Yeah. Function being the point, right? I mean, there's another story you tell about a woman, Maria, I think it is, at Thanksgiving. Tell that story, because, again, this gets to this whole point of being independent and functional.
Yeah, and this is – I think we – probably all of us that work in this field have these stories, that have an impact on us. And I have a difficult time telling Maria's story without getting kind of a little misty about it. But what happened was – we had a training program that began in late August, and the first break was at Thanksgiving, and Maria went to visit her family on Thanksgiving, and it's a Cuban family, very much like I'm Italian, and so I understand what it's like to be around the kitchen at Thanksgiving, and Maria's daughter-in-law was trying to open up a bottle of, I can't remember what it was, but at any rate, she was trying to open a bottle and could not do it. And she went to hand it to Maria's son, her husband. And she said, could you please open that for me? And before she got it to her husband, Maria's grandson intercepted it and said, no, don't give it to Daddy. Give it to Grandma. She looks right. Stronger than he does.
Yeah.
You know, so when she came back to tell me the story, she was so proud to tell me what had happened. And, to this day, it's still one of the things that remains, back there in my mind when I think about what I do.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about how it is that we age. What's the natural part compared to the part that maybe isn't as natural? Dr. Signorelli, you write a little bit about this. Our physical capacity, of course, declines. That's a given. But then you also write about these kind of unique patterns of the aging curve is how you describe it. To talk a little bit about how it is we age. What's the natural part? What are we to expect? And what's the part that's related to us not training properly or not being active enough?
Well, it might be a little bit difficult to distinguish between those two. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we see declines in metabolic rate. We see declines in our capacity to produce energy. And those affect every single system. The question, I guess, to ask is exactly how much that decline needs to occur over the decades through which we age. And I think that's still sort of an open question. We now become more and more, or we've now realized more and more, that a lot of the aging process has to do with our physical inactivity, and that if we maintain activity, we will actually have a positive impact on that aging process. Mm. So I think as we look at this in the industrialized nations and the wonderful things that they've done for us, they've also sort of condemned us to that sit in front of the computer environment that's having that negative impact on our aging curves.
The question comes up too, how much can we older people take it? Paul, there's a story you've told. You did an internship at Tufts. And you mentioned that they kept telling you when you were working with older adults, look, don't baby them. They can take it.
Yeah, that was quite an eye-opener. It was in the early 90s when Tufts University were doing those initial studies, Dr. Maria Fiatarone Singh and Dr. Miriam Nelson. And that was the first thing I was sent down to their research rehab center to work with these adults. And that was the first thing that Maria Fiatarone said to me. She said, don't baby them. And I said, okay. So I went down there, and boy, they were doing some really aggressive strength training, and it was quite impressive. And that has stayed with me ever since. And, that's what we do in our facility is we work them hard. And appropriately.
Yeah, and they can take it.
And they can take it.
Is this an important point, Dr. Signorelli, this idea that, look, they're not if you treat them like they're frail, maybe they will be?
Yeah, I think that all of us that have worked with older individuals have this question that comes up each time we do. I actually probably experience it a little bit more than Paul does, because I have graduate students coming in and undergraduates coming in every year, and we have to go through that same process each time. You know, oh, they're old, I don't want to hurt them, what's going to happen to them? Fortunately, since I just turned 66, I try to use myself as an example and say, well, you know, don't be too afraid. We're not all that frail. We can handle it.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important factor, because really intensity, and I think this is the point that Paul is making, intensity is the name of the game when it comes to training.
Yeah.
That is so counterintuitive, though, you know, that intensity, that, you know, you've got to be softer with older people because we have, you know, they get arthritis and they get, you know, creaky and all those kinds of things. So you have to almost be counterproductive when you're dealing with this stuff.
You do. And you know, Dr. Signorelli can probably explain this better than I can, but there's just something magical about the intensity levels. And it's truly magic. And, you know, American College of Sports Medicine has coined the term, you know, exercise is medicine. And to get those responses out of your body, the intensity has to be there. And it's quite remarkable. I mean, you can't dream up a medicine to do what it does. You just can't.
I think Paul also made a very good point. And I just got done reading something that you had put together on interval training.
Yeah.
And I think this is an ideal example of intensity. You know, we've been taught ever since the writing of the book by Kenneth Cooper, Aerobics, that we should do steady state targeted training at a specific heart rate. And more the literature is beginning to show us that these intervals that go up to high intensity and then come back down to recovery seem to be as effective, if not more effective, than steady state training in a lot of the factors that we're concerned with.
This is a big thing for you, Paul, this idea that there's a photo that you show, two photos, in fact, that I think are you use them as sort of models for what you're – to talk about this, if you would. Give us a sense of this, because I've seen you do this before.
Okay. Yeah, it's a photo of two runners, and they're side by side. They're both elite runners. They're both at the top of the game. They're both roughly the same age, late teens or early 20s. And the photo on the one side is clearly thin, no muscle, you know, looks like a frail older adult. And the other one is very muscular, well-defined, and very healthy and powerful looking. And so I use that photo and set it up that way and ask if I'm in a class, the class to identify which person in that photo looks older or more frail. And they clearly looked to the person that has those signs, and it's the long-distance runner versus the sprinter. So that's the difference. One's a long-distance runner and the other one's a sprinter. Now, we've all watched the Olympics and we've all watched the marathoners, the long-distance runners, and they have a certain look, and so do the sprinters and the hurdlers. They have the opposite look.
Now, this is going to touch a nerve with a good number of listeners, but let's just come out and say it. I mean, you believe long-distance running, Paul, has limited value. It's good, you say, for heart and lungs, for sure. And it's not like this particular runner is unhealthy. But what you're saying is that we're stuck in an outdated paradigm.
I do. And I think, obviously, the pendulum is way over to that side. So I clearly make the statement that I think long-distance running or long-distance work does more harm than good in terms of healthy aging or aging well. Now, I say that pretty strongly, and again, I may offend people, but I want that pendulum to at least swing a little bit to the other side. And I, you know, I go back to that illustration I had earlier in this discussion of the ultramarathon runner not being able to produce enough power to do as many stand-ups from a chair than the inactive housewife or inactive woman who lost her husband 6 months earlier.
Yeah. Dr. Signorelli, what about that, this idea that, I mean, because you're, you know, we are talking about people who are running, and clearly their, you know, their cardiovascular health has got to be good on one hand, but how do you measure that against the other questions of flexibility and strength and power?
Well, I think we have to make a distinction on what exactly our target is. I mean, there's no doubt that if we're interested in cardiovascular fitness, certainly that what we term aerobic-based training might very well be the way to go. I think Paul makes an excellent point, though. Really, it's been known for years that the limitations that we see in everyday life as we age are probably more neuromuscular. We have a very interesting study that will be starting soon that's based on some studies that were done in mouse models where they took mice and they ran them on a treadmill for a prolonged period of time versus giving them a more enriched environment. And what they found was that the neuromuscular junction where the nerve speaks to the muscle became more limited in the endurance trained rats and became more branched or arborized in the rats who trained in the more enriched environment. This to us says something. It says that if we're interested in trying to bring the human body back to what it was when it was younger, where it could move at higher speeds in multiple directions, that may very well be the proper way to train, and we actually may be working against ourselves if we do this constant, steady-state exercise. So I have to agree with Paul that the process has to be a more intense, multi-directional, higher-intensity type training and not this continuous I hate to call it boring, but a repetitive type of a movement.
So how did we get here to this? I mean, this is something, Paul, I know you've been thinking about. When did we become so fixated on this long-distance running? And how is it that we got from the point when we were with kids, you know, running around, playing, you know, these sort of short bursts, or as athletes, for example, you know, most athletes, unless they're long-distance runners, right, don't train quite like that. How did we get to that? This point, I suppose, where that seems to be, for some anyway, the pinnacle of being in shape, running for miles and miles and miles.
I think that's a great question, and I don't know the answer. Excuse me. Because you're right. When we were younger, in grade school, we could, you know, we played tag.
Do you want to take another drink? Well, got a frog in your throat there. Yeah. That's happened. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So, you know, and we did those things when we were younger. Start all that, and yeah, all the way through middle school, high school, and then we get to college. We sit down, we start studying, we get a job, and we think, maybe I need to start getting more active, or I'm getting overweight, so I better do something about it. And what do? We go right into this long duration work. You know, what happened to that other part?
Yeah.
So our mentality of, you know, the Puritan work ethic that we need to endure all things, or, you know, kind of put the shoulder to the wheel and just push it, grind it through. And there's something about the endurance that I think we strive for, but it, you know, may not necessarily be the best thing. Hmm. And, you know, and then somewhere along the way, the intrigue of marathons, you know, not everybody could do them. Only a few number of people could do marathons.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like the benchmark.
Right.
Well, more and more people would like, oh, I'm going to try it. And it's just kind of, you know, cascaded from there to where now so many people do marathons. And, you know, it just somehow
caught
developed
on
that way. Yeah.
Dr. Signorelli, do you understand it? I mean, for example, you mentioned just a moment ago the book that was written back. This was back in the 60s called Aerobics. And the idea, the sustained kind of exercise really caught on. Do you think you understand where the fixation came?
Well, I think that was really an interesting and concrete starting point for us. Kenneth Cooper made some very good points in that book. You know, the points given for cardiovascular prolonged exercise really changed the way we thought about exercise. And then after that, there were decades. We all remember, you know, all of the fitness videos and step aerobics developed and everything else. So
right.
So we became very involved. We almost said aerobic and exercise were almost synonymous with each other, and we couldn't separate them from each other until, as Paul mentions, Tuff came along with their breakthrough research.
Say something more about this. Tuff has this research. What was the basic insight from the research?
Well, I think a lot of people had already thought about resistance training and aging, but really you have to give credit to Tufts for bringing that to the forefront, where everyone began to say, well, look at the changes that we can make. I mean, we can deal with 90-year-olds and show significant improvements in muscle size, muscle cross-sectional area and function. And this began sort of a new wave of interest, and that maybe also has sort of snowballed. You know, we like to latch on to things and hold on to where now we think neuromuscular with aging. And, you know, I personally feel that maybe what we should look at is a more, and I use this term from a physical point of view, a more holistic view of all of the variables that dictate how we age. Mm.
It's that pendulum you were talking about. You want it to be, as opposed to be on one side or the other, find some place and some balance,
yeah.
I suppose.
Right.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Paul Holbrook is with us, a gerontologist and certified strength and conditioning specialist for older adults here in Salt Lake City. Dr. Joseph Signorelli studies physical training for older people at the University of Miami in Florida. He's the author of the book Bending the Aging Curve. And we will take some of your calls when we get back from a break. 801-585-WEST, the number again. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we begin an occasional series on fitness. A lot of new research to consider, apparently more than a few myths to break down as well. But we're beginning today by talking about exercise and aging. And you can join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is our number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Dr. Joseph Signorelli is with us from the University of Miami in Florida, and Paul Holbrook, a gerontologist and certified strength and conditioning specialist at his gym, Age Performance, in Salt Lake City. Let's take a call from Sarah, who's with us in Eagle Mountain. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have a question for your guest. I'm just curious how he would define long-distance exercise or long-distance running, because for one person, long-distance running or exercise might be an ultramarathon, whereas another person, it might be 5 miles or 10 miles. So I'm just curious about how he would define it and if he would dare say, you know, there's a cutoff point or if it varies from individual to individual.
That's a good question. Sarah, let me just ask you, do you do long-distance running?
A little bit. I've done a few marathons.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think a half marathon's my favorite distance, though.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Paul, you start. What do you think? You don't want to do any of that, right?
400 meters. I'm trying to get that pendulum over. Yeah.
Yeah, 400 meters. You mean that literally?
I mean that. Okay, I'm looking at in terms of aging better, and because I don't think the two mix.
Yeah.
And again, I think we can get into this
sure.
later. But I don't think the two mix, and Dr. Signorelli, I'm sure, has some insight on this too, and I think more research has to be done to really look at this, is can the two mix or coincide? I just think to move faster, we have to train fast. And for better aging, to recover from a stumble or take your foot from the accelerator to the brake, has to have fast movement.
Get out of a chair.
Yeah.
Dr. Signorelli, what about that? I mean, you want to balance that in some way? He says 400 meters. I mean, you know, and there are a lot of people who get that. In fact, I was talking to someone in the office today. What about that runner's high? We get that runner's high. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think that I would, as an exercise physiologist, encourage anybody to stop any type of exercise.
Right.
and I think it's wonderful that the caller does enjoy her distance running. Yeah. The one thing that the way we like to look at it is If we're doing the distance running, why are we doing the distance running? And usually, if we were to look for a functional reason, we'd say, well, that's to improve aerobic capacity and have a positive impact on, let's say, cardiovascular risk factors. Now, I think that one of the things that we have to think about is that more and more the literature is showing us that we can accomplish those very same things by using higher speed interval training and be able to get the best of both worlds. In other words, to continue to work on that speed of movement that we that drops off as we age, but also at the same time be able to get that increase in aerobic capacity and positive impact on cardiovascular risk factors that up to this point has always seemed to be exclusively attached to this long distance type training.
I think if you go back to that photo that I was describing, and what's interesting is you have the sprinter who does one form of training, which is sprinting. He can't afford to do any kind of long distance work because it'll make him slower by, you know, certain tenths of a second or hundreds of a second. And then the long distance runner obviously does his kind of training. If you were to ask the sprinter to one day go out and run 10 miles, he'll be fine. He'll be able to do it. His muscles might get a little fatigued, but cardiovascularly, he will be fine and accomplish it just fine. If you were to ask the long distance runner to do the sprinter's workout, which is more anaerobic, short burst, he will struggle immensely. Because the anaerobic training has a better crossover into aerobic as well, better than the other.
Yeah. Sarah, thanks. 801-585-WEST, the number two, join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Liz is with us in Salt Lake. Liz, welcome.
Hi, Doug.
Hi.
I had a question for your guest. I've heard you talking about the fast running and the long distance running. But how does that compare with, say, triathlete training, where you're swimming and biking and running, and you switch up the exercises every day?
Yeah, switching it up. Paul, what do you think?
Again, switching it up is great because you are, you know, getting more movement patterns in. However, it is still long duration.
And that's the problem as you see it. Dr. Signorelli, what do you say?
Well, I think again that training can be modified to deal with exactly what Paul and I are talking about. If you look at swimmers working at a high level, most of their work is done in intervals. So again, I tend to think that we don't have to make this decision to deal strictly with aerobic and anaerobic. And in fact, I'd kind of like to go back a little bit to what Paul was talking about. When you look at that sprinter and that sprinter runs that burst, we have this old myth that said, well, the aerobic system went off and the anaerobic system went on. Well, that's not really true.
Right.
All systems are running all the time. Yeah. It's just that the aerobic system cannot keep up during that high-intensity interval. However, as soon as that interval is over, remember, a good proportion of that recovery takes place using the aerobic system. Mm-hmm. So we never really turn one on and turn the other one off. As I like to tell my students, there's no light switch there.
Yeah.
Which one is going to help me lose weight best? Which of those two? Dr. Signorelli?
The most recent literature is definitely leaning toward interval-based training. And there's, I think, very little doubt in most of our minds that this type of training is the way to go. I can give you an example just from down here in Miami. In Miami, we have a methodology of driving, and that is when the light changes, you step on the gas pedal as hard as you can, so you can race down to the next light, jam on the brakes, and then do it again at the next light. And this is the way we drive. Well, if you look at that type driving compared to if you were to just lightly hold the accelerator and drive along, you get terrible gas mileage if you drive that way. That's exactly what we want for losing weight, isn't it? Yeah. We want to have terrible gas mileage. We want to waste as much energy as possible, and the interval program is the way to do that.
801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Let's go back to the phones with Lisa in Salt Lake City. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Great.
Very interesting discussion. I'm an athlete and a trainer and a coach here. I'm also pushing 50 now and have to really get on board with what your experts are saying, not only as an athlete myself, but as someone who trains other people, having dealt with people really across the age groups. I think there's this sort of sense that, oh, the longer I'm out there, or even if I do, you know, the same amount of time and I do it, you know, 45 minutes every single day, well, I'm going to be fit. No, not really. I mean, you have to be able to take all parts of the systems, you know, that high energy, high output intensity, as well as some of the longer, slower mods of work. And then on top of that, adding things like, you know, weight training and core training, because in order for the body to function at sort of a maximum kind of an ability, I think you have to be able to have a system that all parts of the system functioning at the highest level that you can achieve for your age. And I think what I've run into as a coach is that we have in the United States a little bit of an aversion to discomfort, and getting people to get on board with doing interval training or even training that is a little bit more sustained for a longer period of time, even in the steady state, it's harder to get, you know, people to do that. And I think that's one of the things that we have to address, is that it's important to make sure that we are getting comfortable with being uncomfortable in order to have ourselves work all parts of the system and be as healthy as we can be as we age. And as I said, you know, I'm pushing 50. I can still run a decent marathon time. I've run more than 30 of them, but I train those other systems. I do interval work. I do personally weight training. And that all has to be a part of it in order to get the maximum amount from our bodies as we go.
Great. Thanks for the call. 801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Back to the phones. Jim with us in Salt Lake City. Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. Comment I had is, as I've done marathons in the past, in fact, I'm training for one now, and I found great satisfaction in doing them. I'm trying to make the transition to do resistance and do sprint work. In fact, I go to the track and do sprint work. Where can I find the same satisfaction, the same joy in accomplishing these smaller sprints or resistance that I found, that I find on a Saturday morning running in the still breeze and looking at the mountains and things of that nature? I'm looking to find some joy in this new transition that you're talking about.
That is a great question. I want you both to respond to that, because, again, I mentioned someone in the office saying there's a runner's high, there's the kind of peace and meditation for some runners being out, you know, in nature, those kinds of things. What's the answer? What do you say to Jim? Paul, you, for example, how do you get that same kind of satisfaction with, you know, running these bursts?
I hear that a lot. And I think when you do high-intensity level training, however you do it, with resistance training or sprinting on a track or what have you, you still experience, and I don't know what the runner's high is, but you still experience an incredible euphoric feeling.
It's probably the same thing.
And I've done both. I've done four marathons in my life, and I don't do them anymore, and I do sprints, and I just have this great and euphoric feeling after I've had a sprint workout. And so now when I do it, I'm on a track, and so I'm not necessarily out in the mountains, which is a drawback for me because I enjoy the mountains. But I also look at, again, how I want to better function in my later years. And I just turned 50, and I want to make that a goal, that when I'm 60, 70, 80, that I am moving the best I can in all forms.
Yeah. Dr. Signorelli, what do you think? That's a really good dilemma, I think it sounds like.
Yeah, I think what it is just a restructuring of your own thought patterns more than anything else. I understand exactly what the caller is speaking about. I was a distance runner for years. I no longer do that due to some physical limitations, some knee problems and things. But at any rate, I do understand that that transition has to take place. I will say, maybe in kind of a humorous vein, that I find that a lot of my when I go to the wellness center, a lot of the students find great joy in doing their resistance training in front of a mirror. So, you know, maybe that's a way into that body beautiful concept that's involved. If that can drive in reducing sarcopenia, you know, in increasing muscle size with aging, then I say fine.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. When we get back from a break, we'll talk a little bit more about all of this and also what it is, what kind of training program that you do put together to deal with all of this. You are listening to Radio West on KUER. Dr. Joseph Signorelli with us, Paul Holbrook as well. Back in a moment, you're listening to Radio West on KUER in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're beginning an occasional series on fitness by talking about exercise and aging. You can join us. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's go back to the phones. Eric is with us in Salt Lake City. Eric, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Doug. Good
morning.
My question revolves heart rate and interval training. I'm 57. I started doing a spinning class. And I've seen the traditional heart rate, maximum heart rate targets for age, and I'm exceeding it regularly when I'm really pushing hard on an interval. And I'm wondering if that's reasonable. What are the signs I should look for as a warning if I'm pushing too hard?
This is a good question. This is sort of getting us into the how-to part of it. Dr. Signorelli, you want to start with that?
Yeah, I think my suggestion, and I also do some spinning, is that possibly just – and I know this may fly in the face of what a lot of people believe. I really do not like heart rate utilization in interval-based training. The heart rate actually begins to show its greatest increases after the interval is over. And so my feeling is if you're out there on the on your stationary cycle, use perceived exertion, how you feel, rather than heart rate as a marker.
Paul, you concur with that?
I do, yes, absolutely, yeah.
Nate sends this email. I'm in my late 30s. I've already noticed a loss of muscle mass. I'm a former elite athlete, he writes, so I've really noticed that as I've replaced heavy weight training with an activity like golf, I'm lightening up. I would estimate I've lost about 15 pounds of muscle in 5 years, he writes. My lifestyle has changed, so I just don't have the time to train like I used to. Can Paul give me some suggestions on how I can build muscle mass with limited exercise time? Your point is you don't have to spend a lot of time, right?
Right, yeah. Again, I think, you know, Dr. Signorelli said it earlier, the intensity is the key. That is the holy grail, whether it's strength training or interval training or it's kind of a combination there.
Yeah. What's the ideal time that I should be exercising in a day?
Well,
there's not one.
I don't think there. Yeah, I don't know if there is one. I mean, if for me,
but an hour is too long. You think?
Well,
right?
It depends because there's so many aspects. I mean, I think an hour is great because when I think there's other aspects you have to. And the one caller talked about it is there's the flexibility part. There's the mobility part.
Yeah.
There's the cardio. I mean, you have those parts are really, really important. So what this interval training does, because we can spend less time doing it and get hopefully, well, we know what the recent research is saying we can. So if I spend less time doing cardiovascular work at higher intensities, well, then I have more time maybe to work on my flexibility and mobility, which are very, again, important components to better aging. Or if you simply just don't have time because you have to get to work, well, then yes, then, you know, 12, 10, 20 minutes of high intensity.
But what do
training.
You mean by that, by flexibility? Because this is, I think, an important point. It's not just a matter of going out and running sprints. When you're dealing with flexibility, there's other stuff you've got to take into account, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Like what? Like stretching or like what?
Well, starting out would be, you know, how we do it is starting out by doing myofascial release, which is foam rolling. And you see those foam rollers in gyms and doing that for 5 or 10 minutes. And that's softening up the muscles. So when you stretch, you get a better stretch. And then you stretch for, you can be, you know, anywhere from 10 or 15 minutes hitting high component stretching movements are going to make give you a big bang for your buck outcomes. And then after that, mobility. And the difference between the two is flexibility is muscle related, mobility is joint related. You know, we don't often think about the joints, but we want that the joints to be able to, you know, improve in its range of motion as well, so that we can have better movement as we get older.
So, so preparation before the sprints,
absolutely,
too, right?
Or long distance running or whatever, swimming or whatever you're doing, the preparation is critical.
Dr. Signorelli, anything to add about this idea of sort of prepping for the thing?
Well, I think not simply prepping, although I agree that that's a way to go. You know, we like to warm up the tissue, as Paul mentioned, before we stretch it. I do think that when we consider, we've been spending a lot of time talking about aerobics and strength training, and we have forgotten flexibility. I always, when I describe it to my students, I always say flexibility always seems to be the Robin in Batman and Robin. You know, it's always you know, it's aerobic training and we stretched, and we resistance trained and we stretched. In effect, flexibility is a very, very important factor as we age. In fact, in one of the control studies we did, it was one of the few variables that we looked at in isolation that improved every aspect of everyday living. So I think we've sort of ignored a very, very important factor as we look at this overall picture of what it means to age properly. Mm.
801-585-WEST, the number two. Join the conversation. Barbara has been waiting. She's in Kanab, Utah. Hi, Barbara.
Hi there. I just turned 80 2 months ago. For the last 8 years, I have been working on a slant board and other every morning, 6 days a week. And I'm so excited that I can do what I accomplish with my acre yard here and everything, the garden and everything. But you need this here flexibility and also the consistency of exercising and accomplish what you do. The more I read, the more I see I'm where I want to be, a size 12, and it works great, but it's what you are determined to do. And I love this program, and I'll listen again tonight.
Good. Glad you called. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Sure. 801-585-WEST, the number two. Join the conversation. Consistency. You were nodding your head there, Paul.
Yeah, I think doing something every day is really, really important to keep moving. Yeah, and she brought up another point. One thing that she's excited, and one thing that I ask clients when they come in, the first thing I ask them, and they don't really think about, and it's a question they don't really have to answer, but I ask them, you know, you're coming in, and at your current age, what are the possibilities? What is the best shape that you can get into, or how strong can you get? You know, just open it up, and what is the potential? And it's a question they don't even really think about. Not that you have to have an answer, but if you come from that question, then wow, your world opens up physically, because we're so used to like getting in our groups as we get older, like, oh, I'm going to have this procedure, I'm on this drug, and da-da-da-da-da.
Back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number. Steve is with us in Holiday, Utah. Steve, hi.
Hello. I have a question. I mean, one of your guests has been saying that what's really important is the shorter duration workouts and the higher intensity. But I was also just thinking of the example given at the beginning of the program, talking about the woman who was, you know, more or less off the charts, and she was just working on a farm, which is not going to be short. Yeah. That's going to be working all day. I'm just wondering how he reconciles those two.
That's a good question. What about that, Dr. Signorelli? Betty, you know, for example.
I think when you compare moving bales of hay to running long distances and watching your target heart rate, they're two very, very different things. I don't believe that Betty ever one time in her life working around the farm look to see what our target heart rate was.
Right.
So, you know, what happens is, in effect, when we do labor and we don't even really think about it, we say, well, we work all day. You know, if I can still remember one of my jobs when I was in college was shoveling rocks. Well, we worked all day, yeah, but by the same token, moving a shovel full of rocks or moving a bale of hay or whatever Betty was moving, that really constitutes an interval. It really doesn't constitute steady state exercise. Although it might be done all day, there are, you certainly do not continuously move all day.
Yeah. Steve, thanks. Mike is with us in Salt Lake City. Mike, hi.
Hi, hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Hey, I'm a 66-year-old athlete. I've been going to CrossFit for the last 4 years, and absolutely in the best shape of my life, you know, without question.
And you attribute that to high-intensity sort of high
intensity,
intervals?
High-intensity, absolutely. I've been doing CrossFit for 4 years. I go 4 days a week.
Yeah.
And we do, you know, like 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 pull-ups, 100 leg lifts, 100... something else, you know, squats in maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's really great. Mike's sort of calling to brag, and you should be proud. That's really terrific.
Yeah, well, the point being, you know, we talk about older athletes, the 66 is relatively old.
No, well, it's all relative. But, Mike, congratulations. That's terrific.
Yeah.
I let me ask you this finally. I want to put Paul and Joseph Signorelli. Finally, Dr. Signorelli, let me start with you quickly first. Are you feeling optimistic that the paradigm is changing? People are getting this information like they haven't maybe in the past?
I think more and more it is. I believe that a lot of the major groups like American College of Sports Medicine, National Strength and Conditioning, ACE, are looking more and more at the literature and understanding that we're in an evolving system right now where we are understanding more and more and more about how to deal with aging and exercise.
Quickly, Paul.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, things change so fast in every industry and this as well. But I am very much encouraged with where the research is going and what we're looking at, and still much, much more to be looked at.
It's Paul Holbrook, gerontologist, certified strength and conditioning specialist, the owner of the gym Age Performance here in Salt Lake City. Paul, thanks very much for being with
us.
Thank
you very much.
Dr. Joseph Signorelli, professor of exercise physiology at the University of Miami in Florida, joins us today from a studio in Coral Gables, Florida, the author of the book Bending the Aging Curve. Dr. Signorelli, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Go to our website. You can continue the conversation. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We'll be right back.